Yeah. How is speech and language therapy viewed as a matter of interest? Because I've heard, more quite frequently, or certainly regularly over the last couple of years, people dismissing the whole condition of ADHD, for example, and attention deficit disorder, and saying actually these are just bold children, and people kind of going backwards at this. Is speech therapy generally 100% accepted, or do people sometimes say, well, hang on a second, the child is just shy, for example?
I have to say, with the people I deal with, things like acquired communication disorders, when a person struggles to find a word, people are slightly unclear. People think, oh, if they tried harder, they'd be better.
It's just lack of effort,
It's
maybe
lack of
some
effort.
people think.
It's absolutely not. And I can say that without any doubt. It's absolutely not. And I think
It's possibly the opposite.
that you c and the fatigue people will report from the effort they are putting in can be huge following a brain injury. And I think it's very important that as a society we learn to communicate better with people with communication difficulties, particularly the acquired communication difficulties. For example, people talk now, we talk in terms of, for example, in the FASE Institute in Toronto, we'll talk in terms of communication ramps. Like, you can facilitate a person, you've been talking about kind of physical manifestations of particular disorders or disabilities. Like, a person walking around with a communication impairment, it's a silent impairment because there are no physical signs. Yet, if somebody, for example, a wheelchair user, needs a ramp to enter a building, society realizes that, new buildings, we have to be better at facilitating people to enter, go in and out. Now, just think of the person who has an acquired disorder. They cannot read signage, for example, and they want to find their way around that building. For example, like, even coming into reception today to find out, where to come to do this program, a person with a communication difficulty would at the first would stumble at the first hurdle.
Do you think people then, frontline staff in reception areas and stuff, would I mean, one thing that I say to people regularly is, one thing I've picked up on this program is, if there's any kind of general piece of advice I could give people in dealing with disabled people of all kinds, is patience. Just learn that little bit of patience, because we're all in such a rush these days, and it's just nice to have that degree of patience. But is this a real problem for somebody?
I think that's wonderful advice to give people, to patience and time. And as you say, we're always rushing. And even, and especially at work, in hospitals, staff are under a lot of pressure. And it's the one thing you ask for is time. And I think as speech therapists, we have a very important role to play in education and teaching people how they can give that help. For example, it can be, it doesn't have to be a complex thing you do. It can be as simple as having a pen and paper with you. As I said earlier, just writing down a word can make a huge difference.
And you mentioned brain injury, which is something I did want to talk about, because constantly we're talking about the statistics of deaths on the road, and very rarely do we hear about the statistics of what else is left, which is, there are physical disabilities, and there are also brain injuries. There must be an extraordinary amount of people with the carnage on the roads, and that's just one example, suffering brain injury. But brain injury can be particularly devastating as well for a family.
Oh, indeed. And I think brain injury, as well as just communication difficulties, there can be lots of other difficulties as well.
Personality.
And again, depending on where the injury has occurred.
But Margaret, when you're teaching me, for example, you're as a lecturer in Trinity College, presumably you go through all of the different ways that a speech and language difficulty can be acquired, either or can and manifest itself in children. Are the treatments broadly similar, or do they vary absolutely enormously depending on the condition?
Do they vary? I think one of the extraordinary things about speech and language difficulties is that they're highly unique to each individual. Of course, there are similarities. Of course, you can classify different kinds of problems or disorders, but each individual will have a very highly specific kind of response to the problem that they have, for example. So the therapist really has to work on an individual basis. That's not to say that group work doesn't help. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's a highly individual kind of presentation, I think, overall, when somebody has a speech and or language problem, or indeed a swallowing problem.
Is there a high demand for that? Are people interested in the course, and how many graduates would come out a year?
In 2001, the Department of Health commissioned a report on to look at the workforce planning needed for various therapies, speech and language therapy, occupational therapy and physiotherapy. And it was projected at that time that speech and language therapy would need a 330% increase on the numbers that were employed at that time.
How many are employed now?
Well, the Department of Health would say that there are about 550 employed. I think they're probably, in reality, it's nearer to 450 whole-time equivalent people. So that they would hope that by the year 2015, there would be about 1,300 speech and language therapists.
So there's a way to go.
There's a way to go. But in response to that, three new courses were set up. There's a new course now. Trinity has been there, as Margaret was saying, since 1969.
So it's being addressed.
It's being addressed, yeah. There's a new course now, an undergraduate course in UCC. There's an undergraduate course in NUIG. And there's a postgraduate course in the University of Limerick.
But I think for any parent listening, they're going to want to know, look, if I spot that my child maybe isn't where they should be, and I go along and get them assessed, and is it easy to get an assessment? And following that, is it easy to get the treatment that you need?
Well, I mean, certainly there are waiting lists, and waiting lists will still be with us for a while until we catch up and you know, get the graduates out. But there are, as I say, if you go along to your local clinic, and make inquiries there, you'll be told, you know, the best way of going about it. And very often, I mean, certainly I wouldn't like to put parents off. I think if parents have any kind of fears or, you know, any suspicions that their child isn't making the progress that they would expect, the best thing to do is even to pick up the phone and phone their local speech and language therapist and just get some advice and just allay their anxieties. And then if they feel that there's still a need, that they could put their child on the list.
And getting into the private healthcare debate, but going the private route is an option.
There are speech and language therapists who work privately. I think there are waiting lists for that service as well.
I want to talk for a second about technology. We've spoken about technology before again on the show, and it plays a massive, massive part these days in helping people overcome the symptoms of various disabilities or just live kind of normal lives. The most obvious, I think, probably is Stephen Hawking, the cosmic astrologer. I want to get his title right, physicist, or astronomer, I should say, rather than astrologer. But Stephen Hawking, for example, has an incredibly severe, I think it's motor neuron disease. Yeah. You don't see any lip movement whatsoever there. I mean, Aoife, the role of technology in helping people to communicate.
Well, I'm afraid I wouldn't be an expert in this field. You'd have to talk to my colleagues in Enable Ireland in particular, but I know that certainly there is an awful lot more technology available now. Yvonne may have had some experience.
Certainly with motor neuron disease, technology has been hugely beneficial. And like Stephen Hawking, you can use a device which you can type in what you want to say. It has voice output. You press a button, it will speak it for you. So it is hugely beneficial.
But Stephen Hawking wouldn't have any kind of body movement at all, or would there be a little maybe?
I don't know specifically, but I imagine most people like that I would work with who'd be using, maybe not, I'm not sure what device he uses, but a similar type of device, need some form of body movement. They have got to input that information.
Even if it's like the book that was written recently?
If it's a button activated. Mm. You know, any kind of movement. For example, one lady I'm working with at the moment, we have a switch on the wheel plate of her wheelchair to use to try and communicate with. But you need devices, like to see Stephen Hawking on television, let's say, using that device. He presses a button and there's, you know, lots and lots of information coming out immediately. Now, he would have needed to have spent perhaps hours and hours inputting that information.
It could have taken them an hour to write a sentence. Well,
absolutely, it may have. So it's slow to input, but it is a very powerful device. But I think sometimes as well, while you have technology like that is very beneficial. Sometimes a very low-tech device can be just as useful to a person, like just an alphabet board, and they can point to the letters. That can be hugely beneficial for somebody as well.
Is there any age at which speech and language therapy becomes redundant, or, you know, at any age if somebody is encountering a speech and language difficulty, can it? Is there a treatment out there?
I think as people are getting older, then the need for speech and language therapy is probably increasing. And I think generally people recognise the need for speech and language therapy more.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a cradle to grave
service.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on that, I mean, I want to mention, we've all agreed, and you all agree, that this is not intellectual. This has nothing to do with somebody's intellectual ability.
It can coexist
but this is my question. Is this about bringing, optimising what is in the brain, regardless of whether somebody has an intellectual disability or whether they're intellectually fully functioning?
Absolutely. I mean, it's about optimising the person's communication in their own environment, with their own family, and to achieve, you know, what they need to do. And that's regardless of whether that person has a severe intellectual disability, for example, or whether they have no intellectual disability at all. And as Yvonne referred to earlier, it's not really just about dealing with the person themselves and locating the difficulty purely with them, because communication obviously is at least a two-way process. So to look at just the person on their own would be redundant. So particularly with children, I mean, sort of underpinning all of my work really with children would be empowering parents to facilitate their children's communication, because to work with the child on their own when they go home then to a family with brothers and sisters and parents would be really quite fruitless, I think.
Yes, working with families must be absolutely incredibly important, because that's where most of the communication would take place.
Yeah. Absolutely, with parents and with brothers and sisters as well. And we spoke about patience earlier, and I mean, one of the very simple strategies that you sometimes introduce with families of young children who haven't started to talk or are having difficulties is really to talk about patience and waiting, to talk about giving children more time and pausing more, because sometimes you find that in a family there's so much talking going on that for a child who's having difficulty they just can't get a word in edgeways, because it takes too long for them to even try. But to give them a little bit more time, to wait a little bit longer, to speak a little more slowly and pause more, can make a huge difference very, very quickly.
Back to what we were saying about patience, I suppose, the message that will go out to anybody listening tonight.
I can share a story with you if you like, just what a patient reported, a man with an acquired communication difficulty. He was getting very frustrated with his family, and he was telling his speech therapist that he was getting quite annoyed with them, because while walking down the street he had a walking stick and people walked at a new pace with him and didn't go on ahead of him or walk as quickly as they did in the past. And he said, as well as a walking stick, he wished he had a talking stick, so he could change the way people around him talked, so they could slow down and facilitate him and go at his pace.
Is it a rewarding profession, does everybody find?
It can be very rewarding. It's a challenging profession, I think, because it's a new profession. You're always challenged by the communication difficulties you see. I mean, it's difficult to see some people struggle every day. But I think ultimately it is very rewarding.
Yeah, everybody.
Particularly when you can bring about change, And there are new developments all the time, which makes it...
It also has extraordinary breadth, you know. It's the whole business of, you know, you can work with children, you can work with specific kinds of client groups, you can work with learning disability, you can work with intellectual disability, you can work with adults with acquired... There's a huge range of different kinds of areas that you can work in. And it has an extraordinary psychological component as well as some elements of a medical component.
Can I thank Margaret Leahy, Aoife Hayden, Celia Nicol and Yvonne Fitzmaurice. Thank you all very much for coming into the programme. That was an interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
And that's all we have for you this evening from Outside the Box. Don't forget, you can listen back to the programme on the RTE website, www.rte.ie. We will put full details of speech and language therapy and all one-stop-shop contact details for other organisations on that website as well, if you're interested and if you need to track that down. You can also telephone us on 01208 3386, or you can email otb@rte.ie. We're back as usual next Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Until then, good night and have a wonderful week.